Okay, so if you join us for the last deep dive, we took a wide-angle tour of Sam Muthu's portfolio. That whole cosmic-themed catalog of his architecture and product pages.
Right, exactly. We just sort of skimmed the surface last time.
Yeah, exactly. But today, we're actually picking up the very first card in that catalog, and we're going deep. We are cracking open Sam's personal engineering logs for his AI factory.
And we really need to establish what this AI factory actually is right out of the gate, because we are definitely not talking about a simple chat window here.
No, not at all.
It is a custom three-layer agentic framework that he built entirely from scratch in Python using the Anthropic SDK. And in a single, totally unattended run lasting over 30 hours, it autonomously generated educational content for over 1,600 algorithm problems.
Wait, 30 hours with literally nobody touching the keyboard.
Nobody touching it at all. And it did all of this at a blended cost of about 5 cents per output, hitting a, well, roughly a 95% success rate after its automated retries.
That's wild.
It is. And the logs make one thing incredibly clear. This is explicitly not just a wrapper around LangChain or CrewAI. He rolled his own architecture, and the reasons why are really fascinating.
So if I'm visualizing this for you listening at home, this isn't just like a really smart autocomplete where a dev hits tab to write a function. This is like building a fully automated manufacturing plant.
Oh, 100%.
Like you flip the master switch, you walk away for a day and a half, go get coffee or whatever, and you come back to 1,600 finished quality check products sitting on the loading dock.
That shift in mindset is profound. You're no longer the craftsman hammering the widget. You are the architect designing the actual assembly line.
But let me play devil's advocate for a second. Why build an entire factory? We hear all the time that, prompt engineering is the future. Couldn't he just write a really, really good mega prompt?
Well, to understand why that fails, you have to look at the sheer scale of what he needed. Sam needed structured content for 3,247 algorithm problems.
Okay, that's a lot.
Right, but it wasn't just a single paragraph for each. He needed solutions across three different programming languages: JavaScript, Python, and Java.
Oh, wow.
And for every single one of those, he needed three distinct flavors of content: technical, fun, and spiritual, to match different user learning styles.
Okay, just doing the math in my head, that is a massive matrix. We're talking nearly 30,000 distinct pieces of content.
Exactly. And doing that manually, you'd be looking at a team of 10 or more content engineers working full-time for a whole year. So humans are out.
Right.
But the naive AI approach, just firing off a prompt and hoping for the best, that completely shatters under the weight of this matrix.
Why though? Like, if the prompt says, give me the exact JSON structure, won't the AI just do it?
I mean, for the first 10, maybe, but at scale, if you rely solely on a prompt, you're treating the LLM like a magic box. Inevitably, the model will hallucinate a key name or forget a closing bracket in the JSON.
Oh, I see.
And the moment that happens, your downstream renderer is the actual website trying to display the content, they just crash completely.
So it's not just about getting the text right, it's about data integrity. Like
Yeah.
a missing comma brings down the whole site.
Exactly. And when those schema violations happen in a prompt-first system, your costs become unbounded. If a developer has to manually find the error and rerun the prompt, you are burning expensive dev time and API tokens.
Yeah, that adds up fast.
Sam's notes mention teams burning tens of thousands of dollars on these AI pipelines that just yielded unusable garbage because they didn't architect around the model's inevitable failure modes.
Right.
He needed an architecture, not just a prompt.
You have to build a system that fundamentally assumes the machine is going to mess up,
Right.
which is exactly why he separated the system into three distinct layers. Let's start on the factory floor, layer one.
Yeah, this is the atomic unit of work, the single agent loop. It's the core cycle of observe, decide, and act.
So this is like the individual worker at a single station on the assembly line.
Exactly. It's one LLM maintaining one specific conversation state with the ability to use tools via the Anthropic SDK. And the brilliance of Sam's layer one is that he enforces four strict invariants. Rules the loop cannot violate under any circumstances.
See, if it's running for 30 hours autonomously, my immediate fear is the agent getting stuck. Like, it tries to fix a bug, fails, tries the same fix again, and suddenly it's been burning tokens for 3 days in an infinite loop.
And that's the very first invariant he solved for, a hard-capped max turnus limit set to 20. The agent simply cannot exceed 20 back-and-forth turns in a single session.
That's smart. Just a hard stop. What about the environment? Because if I give an AI access to my file system, my nightmare is that it gets confused and deletes the entire project directory.
Oh, for sure. So he built in Sandbox File I.O. The agent is physically locked to its designated output directory. It literally cannot execute a command outside of that specific folder.
Okay, that's a relief.
Plus, there's a dry run mode for testing without side effects. But the most critical invariant for production is actually how he handles the unit economics.
Let me guess, he tracks the API costs.
He does, but at the per-call level, baked directly into the atomic loop. Every single time the agent thinks, the system logs the exact token usage and the monetary cost.
I love that. So it's not just a worker at a desk. It's like having a meter right on the worker's desk, showing you exactly how many pennies they are spending per second.
Right. As he notes, it's unit economics by default, not as an afterthought. If you can't see the cost of a single worker, you have no hope of budgeting for an entire factory.
Okay, but one safe cost-tracked worker is still just one worker. For over 3,000 problems, that's going to take forever. How does he scale this up without blowing the budget?
That brings us to layer two, which is the multi-agent orchestrator. He uses a Python feature called a thread pool executor to dispatch n number of parallel workers.
I'm not a backend wizard, so explain thread pool executor conceptually.
Think of it as opening up 50 parallel lanes on a highway. Every car is completely independent of the others. You have multiple workers running at the same time, but each one is running its own isolated layer one loop.
Right. They don't trip over each other.
Exactly. They just grab a problem from the queue, do the work, and save the file.
Clean and scalable. But I imagine running 50 agents at once gets expensive fast.
Which is why the most important architectural decision in layer two is actually the model routing. He mapped tasks strictly by complexity.
Because the instinct is always to just use the smartest AI available, right?
Always. And for Anthropic at the time, that was Claude Opus. But using Opus up front for everything would have cost about 21 cents per generation.
Oh, man. That really adds up when you're generating thousands of variants.
It does. So instead, he set Claude Sonnet as the default router model. Sonnet was dramatically cheaper, only about 3 cents per generation.
Wait, but if you use a cheaper model, don't you get worse output? Like, you get what you pay for.
You do. In fact, his logs show that Sonnet only had a 60% first pass success rate for this coding workload.
60%. If I hired a junior developer and they failed 4 out of 10 times, they wouldn't last a week.
But you have to look at the whole mechanism. Because this is an automated loop, the model validates its own work. When it fails, the system feeds the error back to the model and it tries again.
Okay, I'm following.
With up to 3 automated retries built in, that 60% success rate compounds rapidly. After the retries, the final success rate hits roughly 95%.
Okay, I see the math now. It's like hiring a junior developer who works for literal pennies. Sure, they mess up 40% of the time, but if you have a system that makes them fix their own mistakes instantly, it's still vastly cheaper than hiring the senior dev.
Exactly. Even with the retries burning extra tokens, the blended cost came out to roughly 5 cents per output compared to 21 cents for Opus. That discipline alone saved $192 on just this initial batch of 1,600 outputs. It proves model routing is a day one architecture requirement, not a someday optimization.
So we have our cheap, fast workers and the orchestrator managing traffic. But how does an LLM actually interact with the system to read files or write code? It's just text in a box.
Right. That requires an interface, which is layer three, the modular tool SDK. Sam used a dual registration pattern here to give the LLM its hands. Every single tool is registered twice in the system.
Why register it twice?
The first registration is the API schema. That's just a structural description of the tool that the LLM sees and reasons about. The second registration is the runtime implementation.
The actual Python code.
Exactly. By keeping these completely separated, adding new tools requires zero changes to the complex orchestrator layer.
It's basically like a restaurant. The API schema is the menu the LLM orders from, but the runtime implementation is the kitchen actually cooking the food.
Mm-hmm.
The LLM doesn't need to know how the stove works.
That is a perfect analogy. It's the exact same separation of concerns that REST APIs use. Interface versus implementation.
Okay, so the factory is humming. But if you have an army of cheap junior AI workers churning out 1,600 solutions, how do you ensure the final output isn't garbage?
This is the piece almost every other AI pipeline skips. Report cards. These are automated quality gates that run before anything ships. there are six specific categories of checks.
Walk me through them.
So first is schema compliance, checking the JSON structure, then cardinality. LLMs are notoriously lazy and will skip things. This verifies the minimum counts. Are all three test cases there? Are all three languages present?
That's smart.
Then language coverage verifies the code is actually parsable. Content completeness checks for hallucination placeholders like insert code here.
Oh, I hate reading an article and seeing it as an AI language model.
Right, it catches all of that. The fifth check is known failure patterns where past bugs are codified as tests. And finally, a content quality rubric using an LLM as a judge to score for pedagogical correctness.
Wait, you walked away for 30 hours? I know human QA teams that get fatigued and miss things after 50 reviews, let alone 1,600.
And that's the payoff. Zero manual reviews were needed because the automated gate was tighter and more consistent than any human reviewer could ever be. That is why he could walk away.
Which brings up safety. If it runs autonomously for 30 hours, what stops a hallucination from going rogue?
Well, autonomous doesn't mean unchecked. We talked about file system sandboxing and the turn limit of 20, but he also added a retry limit of 3.
To stop that validate, fix, revalidate death spiral.
Exactly. And the fourth circuit breaker is a human in the loop gate for any destructive actions.
It sounds like putting bumper pads in the gutters at a bowling alley, combined with a supervisor turning a key before you launch the nukes.
That's a great way to put it. And the fascinating thing is Sam documented exactly why he built it this way and what alternatives he rejected.
Let's talk about that. Why write a custom framework instead of using LangChain or Crew AI?
He rejected them because their abstractions hide the core loop behind YAML and class hierarchies. He said production debugging becomes an archaeological nightmare.
Because you can't see the state.
Right. For a beginner, he'd recommend LangGraph. But for his production case, a custom 300-line Python script won out.
What about threading versus async? Async is huge right now.
He chose ThreadPool Executor. Async adds huge conceptual complexity with event loops and coroutines with no proportional benefit for a batch pipeline of independent workers.
And for data storage, everyone says you have to use a vector database or Postgres.
He chose plain text files on the file system. The content directory accesses both the audit log and the resume from failure state.
Wait, plain files?
Yeah. If it crashes, he doesn't query a database. He just lists the files to see what finished. Zero database operational overhead. Simplicity equals reliability.
I love that. Okay, so the factory is humming, the economics are dialed in, it's safe. And then Sam turns it off. Why?
He stopped at roughly 1,600 outputs, about half his catalog.
But why? Most people would want to see the progress bar hit 100%. Just for the dopamine hit.
Because the infrastructure was proven. Continuing would just be a token budget decision, a vanity metric. It offered no new architectural learning. Engineering discipline means knowing when to stop.
Wow. Okay, as we wrap up, what's the ultimate so what for you listening? AI native development isn't just about typing faster with Copilot. It's about building agentic infrastructure that removes human bottlenecks, like manual QA.
Exactly. So human time goes strictly to the things AI can't do yet.
It leaves you with this provocative thought. If an architecture like this can replace a 10-person content team for a year, what happens to the shape of our software teams when the limit is no longer how fast we can code, but how clearly we can write the specification for the AI? Something to mull over until next time. Catch you then.
See you next time.